Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Revenue Lounge. I am your host, Randy Likas, and joining me today is Josh Pudnos. Josh is the VP and Global Head of Revenue Operations at Exiger. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Josh, you got a really interesting background. You've been in RevOps for a number of years, but you actually didn't start your career in RevOps. So I would love to hear a little bit about your background. What got you into RevOps? Talk us maybe a little bit about your role in the past few companies, and then we'd love to hear more about sort of your current focus at Exiger and what you're up to.
Yeah, sure. So actually started out in public policy in Washington, D.C. So I was working for a few different organizations, lobbying around state capitals, and then made the transition into tech by one of my vendors, a company called FiscalNote, and they were a startup at the time providing data and analytics to lobbying shops and government affairs departments. And from there, I got at my feet in various different go-to-market roles, professional services, customer success, implementation, moved to New York eventually, different organization, implementation, CS, strategic operations, and that sort of made my segue into revenue operations. Looking at data, how do we go to market using different data points and thinking strategically about our resources and all those different things. So it was a strange transition, but this is really actually where my home is.
So one of the things that I think is interesting is when you joined BrandWatch, you took the company at a time when they were about $100 million up to $200 million. And certainly I think at Exiger, you guys are, you know, in growth mode, growing profitably. But the company was doing, previously to you joining, they were going through a little bit of a transition, right? And maybe they, from professional services, I think, over to like more of a SaaS business. So you got a lot of experience, like I think helping companies scale their go-to-market. And I would love to hear a little bit more about like, when you think about scaling a revenue operations organization, where do you start and what are some of the key challenges of taking a company that maybe has some immature processes to getting them ready for growth?
Yeah, so going back to my time at BrandWatch, it was actually more of a story of transformation and scaling. When I joined, it was actually a company called Falcon.io, and it was a very well-run organization and ended up being married with another company called BrandWatch, basically merging two organizations of equal size together. And so that was a scale journey of its own. And the transformation there, though, was, you know, it's a sizable, really challenging and long process to anyone who's been through acquisitions and mergers are go through their various challenges and how do you integrate the organization from a cultural standpoint, all these other things. On the revenue operations side, not only do you have to incorporate different technology, different policies and different things. In a lot of ways, you now also have to incorporate different methodologies, psychologies, philosophies, learning how different leaders think and how they want to work, and then integrating all of that together. So it's like an extra added layer. I think, hopefully not unfairly, I think this is actually a harder thing, a more challenging endeavor for revenue operations than maybe any other function in an organization, or at least has a unique set of challenges. And so that was a scaling challenge of its own. At Exiger, where I'm at today, you know, we're going through a different transition where it's been transforming before I joined from a, you know, more of an advisory firm into an enterprise SaaS company. And so when I joined almost, you know, going on 2 years ago, really at the beginning stages of that. And so I think even though we're now an 11-year-old company as a SaaS company, we are still sort of in those earlier stages and working on the scale there. And so one unique set of challenges has been working with the leadership organization to transition a lot of frameworks and methodologies from a really different type of doing business into more of a, you know, SaaS best practices that a lot of times the metrics are different and things that matter, things and how to scale those, just a different frame of mind. So that's been a unique challenge, getting folks on the same page. They're coming at this from different levels of, not maturity, but different levels of familiarness with the challenges that face a SaaS organization.
So like specifically some of those challenges, like is it the change management that's the issue? Is it the nature of the functions operated independently, siloed, had their own metrics that didn't necessarily align? Like, maybe if you could talk a little bit more specifically about the challenges that you faced and how you go about solving those.
Yeah, so Exeter specifically was structured in a way that is more fitting of an advisory firm. And so different business units that I think at a SaaS had the company started just a couple of years ago as a SaaS company from scratch, probably would have been, you know, combined organizations. And so there were a lot of different approaches to go to market, a lot of different sales motions, a lot of different structures, like multiple different structures to teams. Whereas as a newer sort of organically grown SaaS company, you might just see, you know, you have an AE organization selling new business, you have account management renewing and upselling and cross-selling, you have customer success working on that adoption. When I joined just 2 years ago, we had just made that transition and not even consistently across the organization. And so we were just learning, what does an account manager do? What does it mean to renew and upsell and cross-sell? How do you prioritize your accounts? What signals can you use? What data do you have at your disposal? So that was very new at the time, and working with leaders and thinking through some of the mechanisms we can use to identify opportunities and build pipeline. And now we're a little more into it, and it has its challenges at this stage as well. And still, now we're operating off of, you know, I think you have difference of opinions starting to really develop, and this is working for me for these reasons, whereas another business unit or somebody in a similar position might be struggling with certain endeavors, and it's less clear why. Well, we have a different segment. We're talking to different customers. That's when you like to get the data involved. Like, what does the data say? But I think a unique challenge to revenue operations that we're acutely aware of all the time is the integrity of the data, not just from garbage in, garbage out perspective, but understanding the nuance of what the data is telling us and what it means, the fidelity of that data. What does it really mean? What are the hidden bodies within that data? And how much can you really drive your strategies from that, given what you know about it? And how do you communicate that with your leadership in a way that actually helps move the business forward?
Yeah. So let's dig in on the data piece for a second, because in preparing for this conversation, I was doing a little bit of research, and I think I heard you say at one point, like when you first started, you had a Salesforce instance, but there was nothing really behind that. It wasn't a great tech stack. And so what did the data look like when you first started, and how do you actually move the organization both from a philosophical approach where like, this is really important, we have to use data to guide our decisions, and then what specifically do you put in place to help make sure you gather all that data?
Yeah. So first of all, the data was inconsistent. It was being input by some people at different rates and then their peers. So from person to person, it was different. And because there were really no rules or guidance or guidelines around what needed to be input and when and how and what it meant, it would also differ from opportunity to opportunity. Basically, everything within Salesforce when I joined couldn't be trusted, and we felt like we needed to essentially start from scratch. So any data prior to 2022 is completely, you know, there's a mound of salt that we take with any data point within that. You know, we still have some decent lead data, but beyond that, any pipeline information is really suspect. So once we did that, we started reviewing the processes. What is the process from a lead to a contact, contact to an opportunity, account creation, the sales stages, and trying to standardize those in a way that was consistent across the organization, regardless of the business unit. We started building a lot more standardization, a lot more requirements that had to be filled out, doing a lot of education around what different fields meant, what fields are required for a new business opportunity versus renewal versus growth. We're also still transitioning from a business from very services-oriented products, which behave differently, which we wanted to classify differently in Salesforce than the direction that we were moving, which is very ARR focused and recurring products. And so there were a lot of moving pieces all at the same time. You know, as we were literally rebuilding the flows and processes and educating folks about the new processes, we were also starting to add in different layers of additional parts of the tech stack. So added a sales engagement tool to really enable much more, you know, of an outbound motion, which was new to the organization as well. I just built out a team of BDRs doing inbound and outbound, brought on an instance of CPQ to start structuring that process and getting people start. I think a big part was like getting more confidence and granularity in the data that was going in. So like what products are being sold, how much is this ARR or is this non-recurring services? Over time, over the last year, we start seeing is more and more confidence in the pipeline data. And let me be very clear, by the end of last year, and we actually had a really great exit to a private equity company or a few different new owners, which this was a major part of. Like we now had, you know, through the due diligence process, we were highly involved in running analysis. We now could, with a decent level of confidence, be able to provide information about the pipeline to help underwrite the deal, to help understand what our customers looked like, have decent integrity around a lot of different data points, industry, size of organization, products being sold, but ton of just so much room for growth constantly. Even now we're coming up on almost a year since that process began. Long way to go. But I think over time, just seeing more and more integrity in that data so we could trust it and forecast a lot better, understand what was happening in the business. And so that's been our journey. There's still a long way to go and a lot more we can do to better understand what's actually going into and coming out of our business.
So let me play that back because you said a lot of really good things there. So you started, you had a Salesforce instance, not a whole lot of process behind that, probably not the best, I'm hypothesizing here, probably not the best adherence to making sure that we're holding reps accountable for making sure we've got good data in the system. So there's a bit of a probably an operational challenge to just get the rep behavior change. But then you've got different functions, right? You've got sales leadership, you've got marketing, you've got customer success that probably looked at what they had or how they approached data a different way. And you had to get them all aligned with that. So can you give us an example of maybe a specific process or a specific area where you had those operational struggles and how did you overcome those and ultimately get people on board?
Yeah, I think we're still trying to figure that out in a lot of ways. Like we're constantly iterating on it. I think, you know, human to human contact can't be beat. A lot of scaling principles around just communication. And, you know, I write a newsletter. It's not as frequent as it used to be, but I think that's probably for the best. I try to do it a few times a quarter to help people understand what it is we're building and what we're driving to and how that relates to the, I meet very regularly with my sales leadership team individually and together. And I think certainly by now we've coalesced around like what are like, we're very clear about we're driving towards ARR services revenue, incredibly important, but it's just, it's really a different stream and a different focus. And so we're prioritizing that in a different way. About a year and a half, we've gone through multiple iterations with my marketing team in understanding and classifying what an MQL is, what an SQL is, like what are the metrics, how are we measuring those, adding in layers of lead scoring and intent data and how we understand and think about that and how we measure that, how we use those to understand what's happening with our business, the quality of what's coming in, what's converting. So we've worked on standardizing those and have iterated. And I think that's really critical because we've learned a whole lot about the business and what's working, what's not, and what we don't understand, we have a better grasp on. So that's going to be a constant iteration. I think that's a truism for our business, whether we're a few years into maturation and as an enterprise SaaS company, or we're a decade into it. I think we're constantly going to be learning. We're going to be adding in new challenges, new missions, new objectives. And so just understanding that constantly coming together, calibrating off of each other, but being willing to change, understanding that change is necessary. I think we've all aligned over time on that fact.
And it probably, you know, makes it easier when you get like these little small wins where people start seeing the progress, right? And we start seeing why we're doing that. I guess I have more of a higher level question. So like the business was probably doing pretty well before you started making this transformation, right? I think I saw that COVID enabled you guys to really expand the different opportunities and market opportunities for you. So the business was doing well. Why make transformation? So when executive leadership decided to do this, was it because of the benefits of recurring revenue or what sort of led to what seemed to be pretty successful to making that change?
Yeah. So the evolution of this company is actually really fascinating. It started as a regulatorily mandated executorship over a bank to ensure that they were conducting the right due diligence process. And so the services that Exeter was providing early on were oriented towards knowing your customer and stuff like that, really kind of basic blocking and tackling as part of financial institution processes. Over time, it built some tech to enable that, to do that much faster, to do it better, more efficiently, started acquiring some tech. And then we started getting to the space where realizing here, hey, there's a real need for organizations, not just banks, but organizations to understand at a really deep level that they can trust the vendors that they're taking on. That's third-party risk management space. So we started evolving into that space. Again, build tech, buy tech, and we're starting to see signals now, hey, there's a really great application for this at the supply chain risk management level. Enter COVID. This is, you know, like supply chain risk was something that we heard about on a like a daily basis. Whether you're working at a manufacturing, whether you're an executive at a manufacturing company or you're a teacher in middle America, like you knew that supply chain during COVID was a major global issue. And I think that's where we saw a lot of signals. So we still continued to build and buy tech, incorporating it, and enter 21, 22, while we still had a great business working for financial institutions, providing due diligence, risk mitigation, and helping them with compliance, there's a huge signal and incredible customer fit for the supply chain risk management use case. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different sort of vectors into that, whether it's regulatory compliance, and we're seeing different regulations come out around the world, different jurisdictions around carbon emission regulatory reporting for your supply chains. We're seeing it around regulations around modern slave labor regulations and ensuring that you don't have improper practices, whether it's your direct suppliers or deep down in your supply chain. So many different ways in that we serve a really enormous part of the economy, and it's continued to hit. So we saw the signals and we said, hey, we need to mature. We need to develop an organization that can properly go to market and serve customers with this need. And so that's really where the investment came in and decided to really build out this organization.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. So you talked about the market signals, right? There's different regulations that are coming and making changes, and that's where you see the opportunities. Then you look at like, okay, who are the companies that we can go after to help solve this? And I'm going to tie this back to working with your marketing team in terms of defining MQL, SQL lead scoring, that type of thing. There's a lot of SaaS companies right now, past 12 months, have been finding it extremely difficult to develop pipeline, right? MQL costs are going up, quality is going down, more people are involved in the buying decision than in the past, approvals need to go higher, like all those things. And so people have been thinking about maybe MQL is not the right metric for our business. Maybe we should start thinking about more of the buying group and the buying committee and identifying those stakeholders who are maybe giving us signals that they might be in market. I don't know if that rings true at your organization or not, but a lot of companies are starting to think about how do we organize more around opportunity-based marketing as opposed to MQL. Is that something that you guys are all considering, or are you guys a little bit unique in that situation?
No, it's definitely. It's something that has been a big part of our journey, especially this year, where we're learning a lot about intent and have brought it into our tech stack and our process, but we have a long way to come in terms of maturing that and really making it part of our process. But very much so, we're selling to some of the biggest organizations in the world. And generally speaking, this is not unique to us. We've heard this from around the market that the buying committee, I don't know the exact number, you hear different numbers, but it's in the realm of like 10 to 20. You know, there's a lot of people that are directly or even tangentially involved in the buying process, as well as other people, other adjacent stakeholders who can come in and that we can help influence the process. And so not only do organizations like us need to have a strategy for how do we build relationships with all of those folks, but how can we continue to influence them through marketing or other means? Yeah. Critically important, definitely an area we need to continue to invest and understand and build out, not just from a marketing standpoint, but a sales approach. Something I would love for our sales reps to do a whole lot more of is, I don't even think it's fair anymore to just call it like multi-threading. It's something even much more mature and complex than just that, because and how you engage with each different person of that, let's just call it a 15-person buying committee. Each of them are going to have different communication styles and modes. Some are going to be on the text basis. Some are on a phone call basis. Some of them will only be there on a Zoom call with their video off. Like, you have to think about them and engage with them in a different way and understand what they care about and what their role is in the buying process.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely bang on. And I think the other thing is a lot of people are thinking about buying committees and buying signals. They tend to think about it at top of funnel, meaning like people who are showing intent or showing signals. There's so many signals that exist from your existing data, from previous buying cycles, maybe, and people that were involved, or is locked up inside those communication systems because reps are not good at updating that. They've got it in their head, or they're multi-threading on our account plan, but they're not entering the data because, quite frankly, it's an admin work for them. They got more strategic things to do. But a lot of people are starting to look at how do we take more advantage of the existing data, you know, and previous opportunities and pull that out for the future. So it's just a really fascinating time to be in marketing and sales and the changing dynamics of being MQL focused over the Spine Group motion. So it's really interesting to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually, I said, it's sort of newer to our motion this year. We've actually already had a few cool instances where we said, hey, this cohort of deals are not progressing the way that we want or maybe even need them to. What can we do from different angles to help advance this? Certainly that we can get different leadership involved and have them get introductions through board members and stuff like that, kind of the more traditional perspective. But we started saying, hey, we now have this marketing intent signals. How can we leverage that to help advance it? And I don't think we're sophisticated enough yet in terms of saying, hey, this deal is at this stage and we need these triggers to happen. And so we're going to engage them in this way. But I think the V1 of that has been, we've just called it like surround them. How can we surround them with information about our company, about use cases that are similar, about case studies and other ways of just getting our solution into just awareness? I think that would be a great win. If every single one of those people walked away, like hopped on LinkedIn and saw our name and they said, oh yeah, we're engaging with that organization. I hopped off that demo. That was actually pretty cool. Like, I want to learn more about that. I'm going to go to the website. I'm going to learn more. Like, that's a win. And those little steps are going to help progress the deal. And I think and hope that we only get more successful and get more at-bats at doing stuff like that, because I think it's really exciting. So we're starting to measure that a bit. We're going to learn from it. And definitely, I think it's worth investing to do a whole lot more of it.
Yeah. So let's get back. So I would love to understand a little bit more about, as you think about setting the correct foundation to scale the business, how do you organize your team? Do you organize them around certain functions? Like, we've got a marketing app, sales ops, customer success ops. Do we have specialists or generalists? So we'd love to hear when you think about just the structure of your team.
Yeah. So right now I still have a fairly small team. I have two folks on my, we call it revenue operations system. So obviously for us, Salesforce is the central spoke of all that, but everything plugs into that. So they're more technically oriented. I have a head of sales ops and one person under him. And that's really everything. It's really like more of the strategic side from top of the funnel through client success that we're starting to think about. And then I also have one person with sales enablement. And I'm very much a hands-on person and involved with all that. So it's a mighty group, a small group. But as we build it out, I think it's really important to be stakeholder-oriented. Yes, we are probably, we'll be oriented in developing more specialization based on parts of the funnel. But I think it's really important to have members of my team who are more out in the field, maybe not so much on the technical side, but be oriented and aligned with specific leaders in the organization. Mm-hmm. And they happen to be usually pretty focused on either BDR, SDR, or AEs and AMs, CSMs. But I think it's important that those leaders have a business partner within revenue operations that they can go to ask questions, that, you know, building strategies, running reports, understanding, getting insights from those, seeking advice on these things. So that's typically how I like to orient things. As we get bigger, we may have cross-functional specialists doing things from commission to, planning and other things. We'll have to see how the business develops and changes.
Yeah. One of the things you'd mentioned is like, we've got the people who are working close with their business. And what one thing we often hear is like the challenge of balancing the ad hoc requests that we always get. Hey, can you run this report? Can we look at this? And it's like, we've got the data in the dashboard, but people don't look at that type of thing. And so there's this struggle of, I'm getting all these ad hoc requests, yet I have to work on more of the strategic projects to advance some of our key goals. How do you go about managing that in your team?
Yeah, I don't think there's a RevOps org out there that doesn't face this, and something we're always trying to get better about. I would say one thing that we try to do a lot of, we have quarterly initiatives that, and sometimes they span multiple quarters. We're still building out a lot. We do our best to communicate that just like really thoroughly, help everyone across from the rep level up to leadership understand what those objectives are and why we're doing it, what it ties back to. Yep. And we're constantly pushing that message. It's very thematic. We're building out this capability so we can do this. Today we have this problem. We're addressing it by doing this, this, and this. And so I always try to tie back what we're doing to those mission oriented, those larger objectives, so that when we get a request for an ad hoc thing, we can more credibly say, okay, explain to me why you need me to do that. Yeah, you know, pointing them into the right direction to hear, oh, this is actually already on this dashboard. That's one thing. Yep. I think repetition is really important in our communication with stakeholders, but I want to empower my team to say no, or to say, hey, that doesn't really make sense right now, or you can achieve that by doing these, this is 90% baked. You just have to tweak it this way and kind of self-service a bit. But we have to be empowered to say no. We have to be empowered to say why, what's driving that. Mm-hmm. Can we delay that? Oh, actually, next quarter, you know, this is on our roadmap to do this, and we're going to be better positioned to do it more thoroughly and comprehensively next quarter. Or so, yeah, just like sellers, we need to ask why and understand what is the pain point and how painful is it? What's driving that? And all of those things.
Yeah. Is just out of curiosity, does revenue operations report up through sales, operations, finance there?
So we report into the CFO.
CFO.
And I know this is always a big topic. See, people have pretty strong opinions on it. I think ultimately it comes down, you know, CRO or CFO is usually the question.
Yeah.
I've had great success. I think I have enjoyed it both ways. I think it ultimately comes down to the person. And we have a great CFO here who is a SaaS veteran and understands what we're trying to achieve. Whereas we don't have a centralized CRO function, we have multiple sales leaders that are a little more of like a confederacy in a sense. It makes more sense to be more centrally focused here. But I think people talk about like a helpful dissonance between RevOps and sales. I think that's why I think there's a lot of validity in having it report to the CFO. Mm-hmm. And certainly one thing you don't want to happen is you don't want revenue operations to turn into a propaganda arm of sales, which I've seen in some sense. So having sales aligned with your financial goals and being able to push back on both parties or either party or any of the other stakeholders. And we interact a lot with, you know, legal and marketing and so many different functions that you need to be in a position to partner with folks as well as push back and be a good business partner.
Yeah. What do you think, reporting through a CFO, and maybe they're the same, but if you think about like how revenue operations as a function is measured, right, the KPIs that you're measured against, what are those? And are they similar to the other cross-functional stakeholders? Is it based on revenue or is it based on other types of things that you're measured on?
Yeah, definitely a moving goal line. But ultimately, I think we are measured, at least at this organization, a bit like sales leaders. What is the revenue that we're bringing in? And I think that's the right way of thinking about it too, because we should be building an efficiency. We should be able to highlight opportunities for new strategic initiatives that are going to open new doors. We should be able to point out where things are getting stuck and unstick them. And so I do think ultimately like our attainment to our top line sales target is really important. And I think also one thing that I haven't seen be as important in, at other organizations where RevOps is aligned to a sales leader is thinking about profitability as much. And I've only really been at this organization since the transition, you know, globally to the not sales at all costs. I happen to be at a company that has always been profitably oriented because it hasn't been, you know, this venture-backed startup. We've operated profitably. And so I think to also have a bottom line orientation is really important. Like, yes, we're hitting our sales goals, but at what cost? Can we be EBITDA positive or at least neutral? And how do we get there? Yeah. And so that's not something that sales leaders are as often thinking about. And I think being within the financial organization helps you, anchors you a bit more on that. Maybe it's not our number one goal, but it's at least in the back of our mind a lot of times.
What? So you'll be there for, I guess January is going to be coming up on 2 years.
Yeah.
Having hindsight as the benefit here, what would you do differently to help you guys scale?
Yeah. So first of all, when I came in, I was blessed with a decent sized budget and a mandate to go buy tech tools. We wanted more automation and efficiency. And I came out of the gate like a bat out of hell and acquired a bunch of tech. And knowing also that a lot of the leadership wasn't familiar with the tech or the objectives that we're trying to build this or even like what how the teams would operate. So I was empowered to just go do it. Like, you know what to do. And honestly, I think what I did was I maybe discounted reps' opinions and their perspectives more than I should have under the assumption that they didn't come from this world. This buying motion is brand new to them. And adoption's hard anywhere. Adoption of tech and processes is hard under the best circumstances. But I was coming into an organization where not only did they not want to do this, but they didn't understand why. And they're just not really understanding their method of operation and how they were motivated to comply with some of these things. Discounted a lot. And so some of the tech vendors that I brought on probably weren't the best investments. And I have some of my 2-year contracts coming up in the new year, and I'm not going to renew all of them. And I'm actually very excited about the prospects of that. Definitely an area that I miscalculated a bit on and wouldn't do so much in the future. I would slow down a little bit. I was highly motivated coming in to make massive change as fast as I could to help this organization hit very lofty end of year 2023 goals, and could have achieved that in different ways in hindsight.
Are there any gaps that you have either in the data or the people or the process that you might take some of that money that you're going to reinvest in other areas to fill some of those gaps? And if so, what would those be?
It's a great question. There are gaps, I think, but I don't know if I'm going to invest it in that arena. I think right now what my focus is starting to pivot towards is, are there existing tools that we can leverage, especially with the explosion of AI? What can we do make my reps' lives easier in inputting this data? How can we automate, how can we extract data points from their calls and emails and potentially use that to keep their pipeline cleaner and more up to date?
Yep.
Make fewer buttons to click. That's going to be a huge win for next year. And so, yeah, I think in that realm, there's a lot we just need to learn more about and continue to focus in that arena rather than going out and buying new tech.
Yeah.
So we want to see more of what we can do with the existing stack.
Yeah. So I've got one more question for you around scaling and operating before we kind of transition into what we call our lightning round. So what haven't I asked you about that maybe I should have? Like, what area that's, you know, been critical to help you scale that we haven't covered yet that maybe you'd like to share?
That's a great question. I think so much about revenue operations is there's the technical, there's the strategic. But so much about the part that's not spoken enough about is the psychological and the philosophical. There's so many decisions. I have a call later today with my CFO and heads of sales about this one sort of esoteric way of how are we going to log, how are we going to classify this one edge case of renewal? And we'll get into the complications, but it's so funny that it's this philosophical decision about how we want to book this deal. And it's funny to me that we live in this world where people are, and people are passionate about it for reasons that I can't quite explain, but I have to understand that they have certain feelings about it and what those feelings are based on.
Yeah.
In order to develop my strategies, and not just about this one issue, but I think this applies to everything from sales methodology. What's the difference between stage X and stage Y, and what goes into that? Like, understanding the psychology and how people are thinking about this is so critically important. And also the challenge of marrying person A and person B's psychology. How can we get to a more perfect union and be singing from the same song sheet and all other sort of cliches? How can we have one set of data and understand it in the same way and be able to repeat that? That is ultimately the biggest challenge and the biggest key, I think, to revenue operations. The technology helps you get there. The strategies come out of that if you do that part well. And if you don't do that, develop the strategies, the analysis becomes much harder and maybe weaker.
Yeah. What's really interesting about that is that's the same thing with any large complex sale that your reps are trying to get people to make a change. You got to understand the psychology. Why are they deeply rooted in certain opinions or not wanting to maybe change or not wanting to change? So a lot of the same principles that you just spoke about are you know, really important as you're trying to pursue your large complex deals as well. Okay, so let's transition to the lightning round. Just more personal based, not so much about RevOps, but more about you. So we'd love to understand, first question would be, having years of experience now under your belt, what advice might you give your younger self who's starting to get into revenue operations that maybe avoid some of the challenges that you went through? What might that be?
Yeah, I've definitely told myself to invest in the relationships a whole lot more, get that face time, understand what's driving them, ask more questions of my sales leaders to understand what their problems are. Certainly push solutions a whole lot less. And just, again, we try to train our sellers, just ask the questions. It's about them and the problems that we're trying to solve for them, not, hey, this is what I can do for you. Yeah. And I might tell myself from last week that too, like not just me in my 20s or something. I think it's relevant today. It's a good reminder for myself.
Yeah, great. What's your favorite part about being head of RevOps?
I think it's seeing that organizational change and maturity and being part of that and help driving that. You know, I think probably maybe the most proud moment of my career has been we went through this giant sale at the end of the year, and I came to the realization that had we not made some of the changes, and I don't know if my CEO would necessarily agree with this, but I think we were a big part in being able to validate the value of the business because we had now data that we could trust about how our business was doing. Again, a lot of room for growth, but something we could trust. And that helped. That was a part of getting the deal done for sure.
Yeah.
And so making that transition, could not have done that. Had that sale happened a year before, I don't know how we would have done that with the degree of confidence.
Yeah.
And so that's huge.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Took a lot of different people changing their behaviors and the organization acting differently to be able to get there.
Yeah. That's great. What's the flip side of that question? What's the least favorite, or I guess ask a different way, what's really hard about your job?
I think it comes down to the adoption. I'm always trying to be really thoughtful about what's the right venue to roll out this new process change. Oh, it's the end of the quarter. We really needed them to do this new thing, but they're heads down, or I'm never going to get the time of day to do this, or I'm going to send this out over Slack and an email and they're not going to read it. So like, how do I get them to adopt this new thing? How do I get leadership buy-in to ensure that they help push it and enforce it and slap wrists of those that are not following the new process? Like that's, oh man, it's tough. That's not so fun.
What advice might you give to somebody who's starting their career in RevOps, maybe you've had a year or two, but they want to accelerate their career. They want to be in your job someday. What advice would you give them?
Yeah. I had this conversation with a lot of folks, or a lot of times it's like, you know, folks that are sellers that are trying to transition into RevOps. You got to be able to talk the talk and understand there's so many awesome resources out there. Some really great podcasts, not to be too self-serving, some really great resources out there, newsletters at a very high level. I haven't really seen anything that's like for the sales ops analyst level. Mm-hmm. Everything is much more oriented towards leadership.
Yep.
But I think just understanding the different types of situations that you're going to come up against, the different best practices, I'm constantly consuming that stuff. And I think you need to do that as well. So definitely be a professional. Learn what the professionals do. What are the different scenarios that you're going to come up against? What are the different objectives that you're going to be asked to do? How do you approach that? Go to the conferences. There's some really great things popping up, especially if you live in a major city.
Yeah.
Go to those things. Get around the people. People are going to say build a network. Of course, definitely do that. But learn how the professionals think about this profession, because it really is and can and should be.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. Josh, I want to say thank you very much. I think this was a really great, insightful conversation. Thanks for being as candid as you were. Have a great rest of your day and weekend.
Thank you. You as well. I appreciate the time.
All right, thanks.